This podcast is an audio version of the MongoDB TV live streams we do. It's been edited down for audio only for the podcast. If you want to have access to the full conversation, go to our YouTube channel.
Hello, everybody. Welcome. My name is Mark Smith. I'm a senior developer advocate at MongoDB. So I'm a great fan of what he's done. He's the as well as being a MongoDB champion, which is a really exclusive bunch of people. There's only 24 of them, I think, worldwide. He's the author of the Beanie ODM, which is very fast, become one of the most popular object document mappers in the Python ecosystem. I guess I should bring him onto the screen so we can hear from himself. Hi, Roman. So this is Roman Wright.
Hey.
Thank you for joining me. So what time is it where you are? I think 4 hours.
It's 9 a.m.
Oh, 9 a.m. That's actually earlier than I thought. So, thank you for joining us this early in the morning. You're looking very, very bright, given it's the start of your day. I love the fact that people can join from around the world. It's even more amazing, really, that we've got you joining us from Costa Rica, Roman, given it's on the other side of the world from where I am right now. So I covered the two main things I know about you, Roman, that you're the author of Beanie and that you're a MongoDB champion. And I think we'll be talking about those a little bit more. Is there anything else you think the audience should know about you, kind of what you consider your specialities to be, kind of what kind of person you are?
Sure. So I'm Roman, and I'm Python developer. I'm actually a software developer, so I use different languages, but Python was for a long time my main language. Currently, I work for Microsoft as a senior software developer. I'm author of Beanie and a few more less popular packages, open source. And I think that's it. Nothing more.
Okay. So you say that it sounds just like you're not a Python developer full-time these days. What language are you working in these days?
I write in C# and some query languages like KQL, SQL, and etc.
I tend not to think of query languages as being programming languages, but it's a very good point that you can spend quite a lot of time building programs, queries. How do you find the switch from Python to C#? Is it because they're very different kinds of languages, aren't they, going from sort of dynamic to more static languages?
I thought completely the same before I started, because back in time, Python and C# was completely different. But modern C# and modern Python has a lot of similar things, like async await patterns, how it works with lists, with dictionaries, and etc. So many things, I think they get from each other, and it wasn't that difficult as I thought. So
nice. Yeah, I actually worked with async in C# before it was ported to Python. So the Python community definitely owes a big debt to the people who added that to C#, which is great. We'll be looking at some async code later, because I have some Beanie and Fast API code to show you, and you may reel back in horror. So hopefully that won't be your reaction, but it should give us some things to kind of point at and talk about some of the kind of features of Beanie. I said at the start of the call that I'm a big fan of yours, especially a big fan of Beanie. And it was, I think, how long has it been out? 4 years? Is that right? It's not very long, really.
I think 3 or 4 years. I don't count, actually. I count only stars on GitHub. there are many.
Yeah, I think you're over 2,000 now, if I remember right.
Yeah, more than 2,000. Well. It's amazing.
Yeah, I can't imagine getting that many stars on any of my projects. I think my most popular GitHub repo is 200 or 300 stars, and it's a repository of my worst Python code. I basically maintain it as a sort of ongoing joke or maybe art project, and so they're not good stars, you know. They're people going, I can't believe how bad this code is. I have to come back to it later. So yeah, definitely not your levels of success. But I wrote a blog post about Beanie, I think the day after it was launched, because
it was awesome. I didn't expect that anybody will see it, because I just published just because, you know, I decided like, let's do it. And the next day, or maybe in 2 days, I saw like this cocktail article from you, and I was like, whoa.
Yeah,
what's going on?
Well, I saw that I wasn't the only one who picked up on how cool Beanie was, right? Is that I saw it on Twitter and it was a retweet from somebody else. So, and this is kind of what I liked about Twitter before the current the sort of evolution of Twitter. But it's like, you know, I was I followed a lot of people in the Python ecosystem, and I saw that a lot of people were getting excited about it. And I thought, well, you know, we should have a tutorial on that. It's a MongoDB ODM. So, you know, we can write something. And I was doing a lot of things with cocktail data at the time. This is actually, I've updated the code. So this is the code we're going to look at in a little while. So yeah, I'll talk about that in a moment. But yeah, that was great. And then you thanked me for the post and sent me a sticker, which I still have. I don't want to put it on a laptop, because then when I replace laptops, I'll have to lose the sticker. So I need to find somewhere to actually stick that to something. But thank you very much for that. So I've been a fan of Beanie from day two, I guess, not technically day one. Do you want to explain what an object document mapper is, or would you rather I did? Because there'll be people on this stream who I suspect don't really know what that is.
Yeah, sure. MongoDB itself has its own query language. And from different languages, programming languages, we need a way to map this query language results and operators to programming languages objects. And this is how we name it, object document mapper. It means we map object from a programming language, in our case in Python, to documents, which is atomic entity in MongoDB. And Beanie uses Pydenti classes to as this object structure class to map them into documents in MongoDB, actually. And also it did only this at the very beginning, like only mapper, and every query had to use native MongoDB JSON queries. But now it's completely different. Now you can use all these magics from Python, like comparison operators and etc., to build your queries and use it. Like you can probably, for basic stuff, you don't need to know MongoDB query language to interact with your documents using Beanie. Currently.
That's very cool. I think some of those features I may not have used yet, because I hadn't noticed they'd been added, because I've been using them for kind of class definition and integrating with Fast API. Hopefully when we're looking through my code, you can tell me where I can modernize it a bit more than what it is at the moment. So that'll be good. You also, like, one of the things that I really like that you've done relatively recently with Beanie was adding the migration support. So I think it's something people often think about as an afterthought. It's like, how am I going to gradually migrate my data from one schema to another? And it's like the fact that you've got that built into your definitions in the same way as, say, Django does for a relational database. I think it's very cool.
This is true. And this is a bit tricky, because when we talk about relational databases, there is a strict schema, which we migrate, actually. While in MongoDB, there is no schema. You can set up a schema on the collection level, but in general case, you don't have any. And the schema itself is written in your code, actually. In our case, Beanie set it using Pydenti classes. I decided that we need migrations, and we need two kinds of them, like not only schema migration, but the data migration, which probably even more important in case of MongoDB, because usually you not only migrate, like you not only add or remove a field, but you also split data from one field to different fields or even to different collections, and etc. I decided to make a flexible tool for this, like where you can add Python logic inside of the migration.
It's very cool. I'd like to see more tools around that, like maybe built on top of Beanie. But I think it's an area where, you know, we could do with more library support generally. It's just sort of, I don't want to call it a problem, but it's kind of a challenge of maintaining MongoDB databases. Is sometimes they're vast, you know, terabytes of data. And one of the benefits of MongoDB is that flexible schema, that fact that you can have documents that are different versions of your schema sort of coexisting. But at some point, you're going to gradually want them to roll them up, either, you know, when you're updating the data in a single document, or, you know, you usually can't do it as a big bang kind of like, I'm going to run this script once and have everything updated. So it's really good to see that you're thinking about that. As far as I'm aware, that's a unique feature in Beanie. Compared to the other ODMs that are out there. To give you an idea of the overlap in our interests, we have Hack Week at MongoDB every year, where all of engineering takes a week out of the sort of the day job, forms small teams and builds anything really that they want to build. And about 3 years ago, myself and an engineer called Shane, who works on PyMongo, took the week out to build a migration framework for MongoDB. And I don't think we even built it on Pydantic or anything like that. We should have done. I think we built our own kind of equivalent of Pydantic and the migration framework. And we had two versions. Like, one worked in code on the client. So it pulled the document, changed it, and then saved it. And then Shane did some really clever stuff that meant a lot of those migrations could also be converted to MongoDB query language and kind of run inside the database. It was a neat project, but at the end of it dropped. I mean, it would be faster, but it's, you're not limited because the query language is actually Turing complete. So in fact, you can do anything, but that's not necessarily advisable. You know, it's sometimes it's just better to work in code than query language. We've been talking about Beanie. There's also Bunnet, which is, I guess, a sort of own. A lot of modern development is being done in async. So I guess if people are picking an ODM for a new project, they're probably not building it on a synchronous framework. But I know Bunnet is the synchronous version of Beanie, which is another one of your sort of main projects.
At some point, I decided that I need a synchronous version, and even there are two or maybe three minor versions of Beanie in PyPI, which has synchronous version together in the same package. But supporting this stuff was a nightmare because of all these async generators and synchronous generators, and all the syntaxes is super different, and I had to keep nearly the same code, but, you know, module by module, and it was a bit painful, and I decided to split them up into two different libraries. And the interesting fact is I didn't know how to name this library. I wanted something about a head, but my English is not that good. And I asked community for help. And you know what?
I do. I remember it very well.
Yeah, you came up with this great name, Bunnet, and so I just fall in love in this name, and yeah, it's Bunnet now.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is that many English people have never heard of a Bunnet either, because it's like, it's an old-fashioned Scottish cap. And so, in fact, it's kind of Scottish slang for a hat as well, so you might use Bunnet to refer to just a hat in general. I was really glad that you picked that. I thought this would work well for a library name. In terms of maintenance, like, obviously you already said, like, maintaining the two in a single code base was difficult. Like, now that you've got it spun out into its own code base, are you maintaining the two libraries separately? Are they going to gradually kind of separate like in terms of functionality, or are you finding some way to keep them in sync?
So currently I have a process, like 2-3, sometimes 4 times per year. I just sync Bini into Bonnet. I don't implement every single feature in Bonnet the same time as in Bini. So everything is going to Bini firstly. And actually, it's not only about the features. It's about bug fixes. It's about pull requests from community. And imagine if I have to sync every single pull request into Bonnet, just, you know, just at evening, I will not have any time to work on anything, and even anything else. Okay. So, and I decided after every major change, or if there are a lot of minor changes, I just sync it, literally using these Git tools where I check the difference and look like here is a sync code. So I'm using await here. I will use this specific operator that I implemented for Bonnet, and you know, this way
it's a good reason to keep your history clean.
Like 3-4 hours and it synced, but every time I'm trying to delay it, like I will do it on Sunday, I will do it next Saturday maybe.
Yeah, it's not the most creative of tasks, is it? I yeah. Wish there was I don't know, just a better way to do it. I'm not sure what that would look like, but I've been thinking about it more and more. I've been playing with the Sans.io kind of approach to building client libraries recently, and I've been vaguely wondering like where else you could apply that kind of architecture, where you build the core of your library as essentially iterators in many cases, or you just work out what your inputs and outputs are, and then you have a sort of an outer shell that does the either synchronous or asynchronous driving of that underlying protocol. But I don't know what that would look like in an ODM. So I'm not recommending that as a technique necessarily. It's it would come with its own problems. Right, yeah. So carry on.
The most difficult is about this. Bini uses a lot of magic from Python, like it overrides a lot of operators and etc. Even overrides the actual await operator for some classes, so, and that's why it's not actually portable well. So
I hadn't even thought about that. That was when maybe some of the viewers will know, I did a series of live streams earlier this year where we built an ODM from scratch, and it was meant as an educational project. It wasn't meant to compete with anybody else's ODMs, but I mean, partly it's a fun project, right? It really dives into the depths of how Python works. But about halfway through, I decided I'd been building a synchronous library, and I decided I wanted an asynchronous library. And so I had to do that porting, and it was amazing the areas that caused me problems, like, you know, in terms of working out the sort of new asynchronous way to, I don't know, the equivalent, for some of that low level stuff. And I gave a talk about building your own async at PyGotham a few years ago. So it's not like I don't know how async works. I really do. But it's tough, right? When you get into those low level details.
But it's I really love it actually, because all this await stuff is adding a new kind of construction. Like when you build a query using Bini or any other ODM or similar libraries, usually you have this thing like chaining. You chain the methods like filter, sort, group, etc. Using await syntax, you just mark that the last guy would actually run the query. While when with synchronous, you have to put something else into the end, because it cannot understand that it's the time to, you know, to start the query. It can build it, but when you actually shoot it, you have additional syntax.
I mean, one of the things I really like about async await is just every time you see an async method, you know that it's doing some IO. you know, essentially that's when it's interacting with outside services. And that becomes really powerful. Like one of the common mistakes that people have with PyMongo is they think that when they create a client, it connects to the database. But it doesn't, because it's really lazy. It does nothing when you create a client, and it does nothing when you call get database or get collection, because it just doesn't need to, because it can create those on the fly when it needs to actually do something. So it's only when you call command or find or aggregate that it actually even makes a network connection. And so people get errors with their database credentials, but they get it way further down their program than they think they're going to. So when you look at Motor, which is our asynchronous driver, you can see when it connects to the database, because that's your first call that you have to await. Everything like that is very explicit, which I guess you could call it an internal detail. Maybe people shouldn't care about that, but I think that they do. You know, it's like, yeah, they should care that when their program actually does something. I noticed on the Beanie website that you've got a team now maintaining the project. So it's not just you anymore. So well done for the first thing to say is like, congratulations.
I wanted to say a huge thank you for people who supports everything now, who merge PRs for me, who check PRs, because currently as the project is getting not only bigger itself, but more popular, there are much more feature requests, much more bug reports, and etc. And even if Beanie didn't change, but Python code style libraries are changing continuously, for example, and we face new bugs about the typing and etc. Just getting out of nowhere. There are around 10 people who checking the PRs currently, and there are two people with write permissions who can merge everything into the main branch. I super appreciate this effort because I know that supporting open source project is not that simple and it's time consuming.
Yeah, definitely. I have never had a successful open source project, and in a weird way, I'm vaguely grateful for that. I have various friends who maintain open source projects, and it's as you say, it's a lot of work. And I have a family, so it's like I have to spend time with them sometimes.
Always trade off. Should you play with the sun or play with the Beanie during the night?
So I am of the terrible mindset where I would consider the Beanie to be the more fun option.
Basically, I even took a few vacations just to support new major features for Beanie. For example, last year when Pydantic 2.0 was released, I had to take a vacation for a few weeks to support the second version of Pydantic in Beanie because it was a huge change there. And I had to not only support the second version, but still support the first one because a lot of people didn't, you know, migrate just in a second to the second version. I was spending it. I think it's a bit crazy to have a vacation just for this.
Well, thank you very much for your dedication. I think it's really important to tell these stories to people, because that often people don't know quite how much of a burden it is, like maintaining a successful open source project. And yeah, you know, it can open some doors and it's got some rewards to it. But at the same time, I guess I'm sure you're the same as every other maintainer that I know. And occasionally you get a pull request, or not even a pull request, like an issue telling you to fix a bug, or maybe they won't use your library, or, you know, they're demanding essentially your time. You get to choose whether to donate your time to these things, and people don't appreciate that. So
Hopefully, community of Bini is really full of kind people, and most of the issues and pull requests are, you know, starting with thank you very much for your work and etc. So, and it's energizing, actually. I like it. Sometimes
that's great.
I have messages in my personal social networks like, "Hey, fix this."
Are these people you know, or like, I've got friends who would definitely talk to me that way, but they know me pretty well. I wouldn't accept that from anyone.
That's just some strangers, and it's interesting.
It's a shame. I think the MongoDB community is amazing. I think that I've met so many warm, helpful, friendly people, including yourself, in this community. And so hopefully we don't have a disproportionate number of those people. There's always somebody, isn't there, that doesn't understand how these things work. So yeah, we're kind of running out of time. So I just want to, we've gone through some codes, hopefully given people some inspiration about how Bini works, what it can do for you. Especially in comparison, I've been using it a lot with Fast API, as you can see, and it just, the two work so well together that it's like, I can't imagine one without the other. I did actually, that's not true. I recently built something with, Motor directly. And then I found that every class that I had to have essentially a mapping into Bison and out of Bison, like all the stuff that Bini just does for you automatically. And I realized that it was the wrong way to do things. But by that time, a lot of the code was written. It had seemed simpler at the start, and then I realized it wasn't. So I'm actually in the process of rewriting that using Bini at the moment. So partly so that I can write a tutorial about it and explain what the benefits are. So hopefully we'll see that in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, you're a MongoDB champion. And I think that was 3 months ago, something like that, that you were,
this was the renewal. So this is the second year of my championship.
Oh, okay. I may have missed that. For some reason, I thought that you weren't before. I remember having this conversation.
I think MongoDB gave me too many, badges. Like I was, a MongoDB user group leader back in Berlin when I was living in Germany. Then I became this champion guy. And again, champion guy second year. So thank you very much for...
You're more than welcome. Thank you for your work, like helping MongoDB users. I think the two things are like MongoDB user group leader is... like a separate thing from the champions, but it's like it definitely helps to be a user group leader if you're looking to be sort of elected to champion status. But you were your name came up. I was very pleased. And that's what is it particularly that drew you to MongoDB originally? Like, what is it about MongoDB that you really like?
I think that everything started with Bini, actually. Like a year before I started to make these meetups in Berlin. I was living in Berlin before. Mm-hmm. Maybe during COVID, maybe a bit before this time, I wanted to play with Fast API. And I found that there is literally no ODM which supports Pydantic, which supports Fast API style, etc. And I said, like, probably I can do it myself. And it was quite simple one, just a mapper to the classes. Pydantic can serialize and deserialize everything back and forth to JSON or JSON. And after that, when I published, it got popular. Like in a few months, not as popular as currently, but many people recognized it and texted me like, "Hey, please do this feature and this feature there." And I was like, "Whoa, it could be really nice to have this feature there." And then I don't remember who, Steny or somebody from MongoDB connected with me like, "Hey, maybe you want to do some meetups about MongoDB. You probably can talk about Beanie there and just connect with other MongoDB guys. And I decided, like, yeah, this sounds really great. And this is how I became MongoDB user group leader Berlin. I hosted, like, I don't remember, around 7 probably meetups there in Berlin. And then this champion program started, and I was invited also. And I'm super appreciate this. And yeah, during these meetups, I found that it's interesting to make other types of content, not only talks, but articles, probably videos, and etc. And I started to write articles actually about how to use Beanie and how to use MongoDB in general, because Beanie was getting more and bigger and bigger, and I had to explain, like, what I mean by this API and etc. Like, what is the way I suppose it should be used and etc. And so yeah, I wrote some articles, and somehow natively I became this part of MongoDB community, and I'm super happy to be.
Yeah, I recognize a lot of key beats in that story. It's like you start something that's a little bit outside your comfort zone, and then you just get it becomes this sort of amazing opportunity to learn lots of new things, like how to communicate in different ways, how to be part of a community, how to nurture a community. You know, it's funny how these things all start with usually, like, that can't be too hard, and then you start going and you realize, like, actually there's a lot more there than you think it is. But Roman, it's been fantastic talking to you. I think we've more or less run out of time. I don't have a neat way to finish the call. I should have kind of thought of, like, you know, a neat question that I could get you to answer and then say thank you very much and then end the call. But I haven't done that. So instead, I'm just going to say thank you so much for all your work, the work that you've done for the MongoDB and Python communities. As you know, like, if there's anything we can do to help you out at any point, like, just let us know. And it's been great talking to you for the last hour.
To watch the rest of this incredible conversation, go to our YouTube channel or access all our content at the Developer Center, mongodb.com/developer.